thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com. Hello and welcome, everybody, to a very special Memorial Day Monday Night Magic episode 209, and I am joined, hopefully, by my very special co-host, Marcel.
Yes, how you doing, Tom?
And doing well, and so you are surviving your holiday weekend.
Oh, it was quite a long one. Two different spots, went camping, went to Carnival, and I survived the weekend, and I'm here today.
I wasn't sure if your voice was, I didn't know if it was going to be kind of Las Vegas-like, where your voice was going to be gone for like 2 or 3 months.
Now, I stayed away from the scars this time.
Okay. And the other voice here actually is I don't think you've ever been with us on Monday Night Magic, is Chewy from the Mana Pool.
I have been here once, but it was just me and Eric.
Oh, that's right. I can't remember where I was, because usually I'm always here, but...
Tom sabbatical.
Yes. And Chewy, as long as you know, this has come up on prior podcasts, is when I'm podcasting, in order to feel like I'm actually talking to somebody, I actually talk to my Jonas Brothers poster.
Which one am I?
I don't know. Marcel has gotten to see this Jonas Brothers poster. Was it as dirty as I built it up to be, Marcel?
Yes, it is. It's as disturbing as it is. Trust.
It's an amazing poster. I don't know. Like I said, one of them is attractive. The other two are kind of deformed. You can pick whichever one you want.
Ooh! I'm totally the deformed one on the left.
Yep, you're kind of on the middle on my poster. So guys,
that's okay, Tom. Whenever I'm talking to you, I'm looking at my plush weighted companion cube. So,
oh, you have one of those? I've always wanted a companion cube.
It will never lie to you,
Marcel. Did you ever play a Portal? It was made by Valve. It was the people that made Half-Life.
Oh, yeah, I played that. That was actually very fun.
Those little cubes with the heart on it, those are the companion cubes.
They're doing a Portal 2.
I forgot what they did. What did they do? I forgot.
Nothing. You just moved them around, but like they were supposedly your friend.
I love my weighted companion cube.
Because they had hearts. Yeah, that's a phenomenal. But you're right, yeah, Portal 2 will be coming out soon. That game is going to be phenomenal.
And it's going to be a full game instead of just a nifty tech demo.
But for a tech demo, I mean, I must have played that thing for 10 hours.
Oh, it was the most ridiculous tech demo ever, but it was still just a tech demo. That's why they packaged it with, what was that called, the orange box.
Yes.
They're like, nobody's going to buy this. We'll throw it in as a bonus. And to be honest, it's the only part of the orange box I've played.
Conley, I was just thinking about Conley because we'll be talking about Pro Tour San Juan here in a second, but we'll put that off here just for a minute. So, guys, this is Monday Night Magic, so obviously it's a magic show. But sometimes we got to divert a little bit off the trail to talk about just interesting little news stories. And, Marcel, you found one that fascinated me.
Yes, this is quite disturbing and funny at the same time. If you check it out, I think we have it in the show links. It's a toddler smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. They actually got a picture of another one smoking, doing smoke rings and everything. I guess his father got him addicted at an early age, and... now he's out there in Indonesia puffing away. He actually did get the Child Protective Services did finally get a hold of him, and now he's going through rehab right now for cigarettes.
Yeah, imagine having like a nicotine lozenge, like pacifier or something like that to like get out of that. So we were talking before. I mean, when you see this kid, he is I think 2 years old, and he's like 44 some pounds well as I'm looking at this. And I'll tell the guys here that at my clinic, I've also seen small children that are. I will be insensitive for a minute, but they are enormous. Like, I've had a 2-year-old that was 50-some pounds. The other disturbing one where different cultures have, I'd say, different norms for when breastfeeding is still kind of acceptable versus not acceptable. But it's a little weird to me that when I'm visiting with a 2-year-old and their mom, that the kid breastfeeds 7 times during a 1-hour visit.
Whoa.
That gets a little strange.
Setting them up for life.
7, so I can't say much.
Exactly. I mean, for some cultures, even like there's an upcoming movie with like Chris Rock and Adam Sandler, and then there Kevin James plays a character whose son is 4 years old and still breastfeeds. So that comes up to his wife, starts breastfeeding. And they're like, "How old's your son?" He's like 48 months. It's like, that's 4 years old.
Yeah, that's borderline disturbing.
And the other one, this one people have probably heard of. I think this came out in like 2008, 2009. I do this other podcast like roughly 4 times a year with some friends where all we do is we pick a top 10 list, like top 10 liquids. or top 10 things to not say during sex. We come up with like one top 10 list, and we have to come up with items for it. So the next one was the top 10 most interesting or coolest animals. So I was doing my usual internet search, and that came along the most disturbing, ugliest animal I have ever seen in my life. And I'm not sure if you guys have seen this link before, but it's called the blobfish.
This is terrifying.
It looks like he took Ziggy and cut his head off. I mean, really is what it looks like.
Oh my god!
And so this fish apparently lives off the coast of around Australia, and it lives very deep down, so to maintain buoyancy, it can't use an air bladder because they wouldn't be effective. So apparently this thing evolved, or devolved, however you want to look at this thing, where its flesh is just mostly gelatin, like a gelatin-like substance. And they show a picture of this thing. It is the ugliest animal I have ever seen in my life.
How did you find this?
I was just searching for like top 10 like coolest animals or weirdest animals, and this is on every single list. Especially the main picture is the one they have in the link, where it looks like it has like a booger coming out of its mouth. That's like the most common picture of this thing.
Since the blobfish has no muscle, it just eats whatever floats near him or her. What the hell?
And it looks like Ziggy. It has like a big kind of big nose and a mouth and two. It is just an atrocious animal. So I just want to share that with you guys. So should we actually talk about some magic?
Please, I'm afraid.
Yeah, we're all like 6 minutes in the podcast. We should probably give people some magic talk here. We have a couple big things about. I would say the most important thing that happened this weekend was we had Pro Tour San Juan, and we actually knew quite a few people that went to this. We Conley was there, Gavin went there, Dan Alpers from CCG Gamers was there because we'll talk about him a little bit later. Did any of you guys watch any of the coverage for this? I admit I did not. I just would look at the standings at the end of the day.
Yeah, I looked at the deck list, and that's about it. I didn't have too much time.
Yeah, same here.
So I did want to say congratulations to let me give congratulations to the winner first before I go on to my North Dakota love. This is Paulo Vitor Damo de Rosa, Pro Tour San Juan, so congratulations. But kind of like Marcel said, I always get excited where I tend to look at the top eight where they have the player profiles and also their deck lists, because you want to see what people are playing. I guess I don't get quite as excited for deck lists when it's a draft, because it's like, I guess it's neat to see what strategies they got, but you really want to see the really rogue decorations like Conley had that he apparently gave to somebody else and did very well with it. But the thing that got me is when I was reading about Brad Nelson, who won Grand Prix Washington, D.C., and top eighted at Pro Tour San Juan, is from Fargo, North Dakota. So I can't wait till Conley gets back on the show and rub this in his face.
That's cold, man.
I don't care. I have $20 and I'm going to rub this in his face. So the kind of a little bit of the news was there's this kind of deck profile on the Mothership site, and the little story says, I'll just actually read the blurb. It says, Eric Froelich is one of Magic's greatest players. It says, if you thought Eric was rusty, you needn't have worried. He ripped off a 9-0 run undefeated on day one. He said his deck was actually made by Conley. It was a concoction to serve as a counter to white-blue control and Junless popping up all over. And obviously it did very well. But it's kind of an interesting, cool deck where All Is Dust is a card that I think everybody knows is powerful, but it's now really starting to see a lot of play. And this was Block as well. Have you guys ever played with All Is Dust? This card is just amazing.
Yeah, I actually played with the deck list that he made, and it's a fun deck. And All Is Dust that card's going to go up, especially when Mirrodin comes out, because we're going to see this is going to get well into decks.
Yeah, especially with, kind of the theme of this is kind of a white-blue-black control deck. It has, the various superpowered Planeswalkers, Jace, Mind Sculptor, Gideon, Everflowing Chalice, which is a personal favorite card, All Is Dust, the one where everybody has to sacrifice their non-colored permanents, but then it really abuses the man lands. You have Creeping Tar Pit and Celestial Colonnade. It's like, well, guess what? They stay in play.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting.
And it's good for control because it uses the Mind Shatter, so it could take away their cards when they go all out. So when they do the Mind Spring, you could do a Mind Shatter, take away all their cards, and it uses the Esper Charm also. So you use that to draw cards or as like a some of a blinding for them to discard. So it has a lot of elements for control. I like it because you could really just sit back and control the game. You have control, really.
And see, now, was there any other... I took a quick look through some of the decks. Was there anything that for you guys that really jumped out for Block Constructed? This is something where Conley will talk a lot more about when he comes on next week, but I just want to get your guys' thoughts. Because I am not a block-constructed man, so whatever I say, I will get angry emails about, so I'm just not going to say it.
Actually, I didn't even look at the block-constructed decks.
I am not a any sort of tournament player.
Yeah, well, I mean, the one thing I would say for the tournament players out there, you can call and correct me, but the one deck that I'd say to me looked like a real big breakout was the green-blue-black Landfall decks. This abused things like Agent of Zendikar. I'm going to see if I can actually pull up a kind of a nice list for you guys here. But just interesting decks. It would, you know, they had Vendetta. Trying to look at all the different cards in this. There's so many things. But really really abused Landfall in this black-red-green deck. And in the end, they would really be just destroying people with the Agent of Zendikar. That's the one where it comes out and makes plant tokens, and then when you Landfall, they get +1/+1.
Oh, the Avenger of Zendikar.
Oh, Avenger. Sorry, I kept calling Agent. Thank you. Avenger of Zendikar.
I'm sitting there going, I've never heard of this card.
Yeah, it seemed like a really cool deck, and it seemed like that one really was doing very, very well. It was kind of a standout.
Actually, that's what
the red, blue, green one?
Yeah.
The red, blue, green one? Yeah, I played against that. That's a pretty good deck. It's solid.
And then, so there's kind of the red, blue, green, and then also kind of a green, blue, black version as well.
I don't see that one.
I don't see that one in the top eight.
Oh, this was one. It may have not made the top eight. I was just looking kind of as you kind of ran through the features of the day.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Beastmaster's Ascension. We got two decks with it.
Oh, wow. Marcel and I have talked about our love for that card.
The card has actually jumped in price. It was at 10 cents online, and now it's at 50 cents. Oh, here, three decks. Huh.
You know, I finally got that out. I put it in my casual staple Unblockable Wizards deck, and it's just not right.
It's a phenomenal card.
Yeah, it's definitely a sleeper. We'll see people play with this, especially once it rotates and we get the Mirrodin in. We'll see this card go up in value and more people play with it. I mean, really, the block, I actually quit playing competitive standard because of the price of cards, so I went into going into block right now. Okay. And so my main reason for that is if you understand block fairly well, when it does rotate, all the decks that are in block right now, the top ones, those will be the decks that you play. Just like the last one, Jund was one of the top decks in Alara block and the Mythic. And so when that rotated out, those were the only ones left. Fairies were gone, and then people were scrambling for decks. So they went to Jund, and so that's how I feel like, you know, I want to be able to be competitive for the next standard. So I decided to put my cards into block. Yeah. I'm liking it.
I like this, speaking of Beastmaster Ascension, I like Guillaume Matignon's deck. The Hatcher, the Predator, Nest Invader, it's got Awakening Zones, a whole mess of Eldrazi spawn tokens with the Ascension, Burst Lightning, Eldrazi Monument. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it was a pretty exciting collection of top eights. I thought it was a little different than people expected. We hadn't seen really a lot for Block Constructed yet, but it was still kind of cool to see this, a good variety of decks. All right, guys, the one last thing I want to mention about Pro Tour San Juan is Dan Alpers. He runs the CCG Gamers. We've been working with him with the Games for Troops. CCG Gamers is kind of a nonprofit organization. You can go to ccgamers.org to learn more about it. But he was actually the winner of the My Magic Writing Contest, where you could write about how magic changed your life, and you get a free trip to Pro Tour San Juan, and he got that. And he then contacted me before Pro Tour San Juan, maybe about a month ago, saying, I want to show off an MTG Cast t-shirt. So I got him one there, and if you look at the official video coverage for Wizards of the Coast, they have an interview with Dan, and he's pimping the MTG Cast shirt right there.
Two thumbs up, Dan. We got to give you love.
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you to Dan, because there's no mistaking that is the MTG Cast t-shirt right there. And I've already had a couple of other people now ask, well, how can they get one of these shirts? And I'm like, well, if you have 1995, you are in luck.
Damn, I have to get some Mana Pool t-shirts made so that my three fans can buy them.
Well, this would, if I remember correctly, this would be like the third or fourth MTG cashier we've ever actually moved. So we're not too far ahead on that one. Let's see.
I'll buy one. My mom will buy one. That'll be about it.
And then the other cool thing about Pro Tour San Juan was they really used this as a way to, I guess, introduce us to some of the new products that are going to be coming out in the future. We have heard about Arch Enemy. You heard me drone on for hours about this last episode. But they used this a way as they had a lot of people playing Arch Enemy there, so people got to see new scheme cards and get more excited about it. Did you guys take a look at any of the Arch Enemy stuff from this?
No, I
was muted. Oh, yeah.
So kind of for you, Marcella, you know, for being kind of more of an MTGO player, does this kind of thing seem exciting or not exciting?
It seems somewhat exciting, if I could get into it. The only problem is multiplayer on MTGO really does not go well. This is drawn out, so I don't really see myself playing this, but I hope it does do well.
And then how about for you, Chewie? You seem to be quite excited for Arch Enemy.
I don't know if I personally will buy them, but I know that one of my co-host dorks will, and so then I can play with them. And that makes me happy.
And this is the thing where we talk about, we won't go through all the rules and stuff from last time, but we have some of the new names for, we actually have names for all the schemes, but we can go through some of the ones we actually have the text for. So here, Marcel, I'm going to see if I can get you excited more for this. So okay. The new ones that we have are, that one's boring. I like the Iron Guardian Stirs. This is you, when you put the scheme into motion, you get either a 6-6 or an 8-8 Golem. Probably the one people like the most is Your Puny Minds Cannot Fathom, which is just a cool name no matter what you do.
Good lord.
It says, when you set the scheme into motion, you draw 4 cards. You have no maximum hand size until your next turn.
Good lord.
And remember, you're flopping these things over every turn if you're the archenemy. And
let me just draw 4 cards for free. Oh, let me get right on that.
Yeah, and then there's, Look Skyward in Despair. You put a 5-5 red dragon creature token into play. I mean, there's a lot of just amazingly strong things. We get green Sapperling tokens. It's going to be really fun. And then now they even have the full deck list for the black-red one, which is the bring about the Undead Apocalypse. And there's actually some, not too bad of cards in here. I mean, we have Avatar of Discord, which is, I'd say, at least a decent rare, I guess. You have to discard 2 cards, but it is a 5-3 flying.
We got Rancor in it. I haven't seen that card in a while.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some decent stuff where the decks themselves don't look terrible. I mean, you get Makeshift Mannequin, you get Zombify in this one. The decks look, there's not going to be any probably huge dollar cards, but they're going to be decent and playable, where I really feel like they are saying Archenemy to be kind of what Plane Chase should have been. Like, I really was excited for Plane Chase. I enjoyed it for kind of a short period of time, then I got bored with it. So it felt like I was kind of playing the same thing over and over again. This seems a little bit different, where I'm the one player, I'm flopping over my schemes, and I get excited because I'm getting these huge, crazy effects. And it's not like Plane Chase, where half the time they were just punching me right in the groin whenever I flipped over the new plane, because it would just completely hose me. I'm like, I don't want to flip over a new plane, it's just going to screw me over. It seems like an archenemy, you are always excited to flip over the next scheme, because it's going to be something good.
Something big. I like the idea behind it. I was hearing that archenemy was skewed towards blue, that actually blue decks were going to do better in it because of something. I didn't exactly get into it, but did you hear about that?
I guess I had not. I went through the colors last time of the decks on the solo episode, but I hadn't heard if they thought one decks were going to be better than the other. But they may be coming out of Pro Tour Sign 1 where they're actually playing these decks.
It's be interesting.
Yeah, it seems like if you're kind of a one versus many, I mean, as much control as you can have seems to be a powerful effect. Because it seems like if you're playing aggro, you might be able to take out like one person, but you're going to be being attacked by 3 other players.
Yeah.
Where it seems like control would be much more powerful in this sort of a format.
Of course, Sweeper's Day of Judgment, take out everyone's creature.
Oh, exactly. And then also interesting is included in each of the Archimedes decks is going to be a preview card for M11. And luckily for you, Chewy, you don't have to buy the decks because we already know what those preview cards are.
All of them?
Yeah, at least the 4 of them, which I think there's only 4 Archenemy decks.
Oh, there you go then.
And I think there's, if I understand correctly, there's only 1 M11 card in each Archenemy deck. That could be different. If I'm wrong, please email me and yell at me, but I thought it was only 1.
There's only 1 in the deck list for the black one that we just talked about that I can't see the name of.
It's so the ones that we have so far, we have Plummet, which is a green and a colorless. It's an instant. It just says destroy target creature with flying. The one I think could be really interesting and potentially sort of powerful is Reassembling Skeleton. It's a black Nicolas, it's a skeleton warrior, it's just a 1-1, but it is the ability of a black Nicolas, return this creature from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. So it's an interesting kind of recursive sack outlet.
Yeah.
And then the one that I have to admit I'm probably the least interested about is Sorcerer Strongbox. 4 colorless mana, this is an artifact. It says 2 mana, tap, flip a coin, so most people have already stopped listening, but, keep listening. If you win the flip, sacrifice Sorcerer Strongbox and draw 3 cards. I understand that this gives you a possibility of getting card draw and colorless, but it seems like 6 mana and you potentially don't get any cards at that point seems a little...
I might play this in draft or in sealed or something, but that's about as far.
Okay, good point. I was thinking kind of constructive, but maybe in draft it would still be playable.
Somewhat. I mean, you wouldn't want to put it in your deck, but if it's there, I mean, it's 3 cards. I mean, you play with the Hedron Matrix, and I would play that card just to get the 3 cards usually.
Yeah, and that one is kind of a guaranteed, and you can also use it for mana in the meantime.
Yeah, exactly.
And the 4th one we have is Skull Cage. This is 4 colorless mana artifact. At the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, Skull Cage deals 2 damage to that player unless he or she has exactly 3 or 4 cards in hand. So it's kind of like a...
They're reprinting Skull Cage?
Yes.
From Mirrored Image, yeah.
What an epic failure.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. And honestly, when I first read it, I'm like, that's a new card. And I put it into Magic Cards at Info. I'm like, that's not a new card. Okay. Tom needs to go back to school.
Well, it's a very old card, and it's from a dark time in Magic's history.
But again, this gives you hints of where we're going back to Mirrodin in the near, near future. And I talked about this with some of the local play group, where a lot of people have these very angry, unhappy memories of Mirrodin because of the crazy Ravager and Affinity stuff. But I think if you asked the majority of more casual players that weren't being just assaulted and just mind just destroyed in turns because of this, if you're a casual player, you really liked Mirrodin, because pretty much every card you opened in a pack you could use, because everything was colorless.
Nah, not really, no.
You still didn't like it?
Well, I mean, at the time, it's when I first got back into Magic and Onslaught, and so we were all, and my big group in college had formed, and so there were, you know, 6-8 of us always playing Magic, and we were trying to break into, you know, the Friday Night Magic sort of thing. And every time we went, we got murdered by Ravagers and whatnot. And even before Ravagers, the Broodstars and all that were pretty bad. And so that turned us off of Mirrodin in tournaments entirely for the most part. But in the casual group, we're like, oh, look, more artifacts.
What for you, Marcel? You can be the tiebreaker. We have me, who's I've got pom-poms and a short skirt on him saying rah, rah, rah for more artifacts. Chewy. You know, he's the Debbie Downer right now. He's saying, no, I don't like this. This is scary.
For the record, I want a picture of you in the short skirt and the pom-poms.
Actually, there is one. This would have been about 5 or 6 Halloweens ago. I was big into tennis, like in high school. So I went as Billie Jean King for Halloween. Because when I put on glasses and a wig, I kind of look like Billie Jean King. That's where this came from. So I had like this. Short skirt.
Same facial hair and everything.
Exactly. I made sure I shaved that morning, so I only had the 5 o'clock shadow. And then when I went to this Halloween party, this was when I was in medical school, and there's a guy there dressed as Beyond Bork. So we both ran up to him, we're like, are you Beyond Bork? He's like, are you Billie Jean King? I'm like, yeah. We're the only two people to get each other's costumes on that day. But this is, I mean, for you guys, like, I don't know, and my wife has commented this, whenever I seem to make Halloween costumes, I always tend to dress as a woman. And this isn't something I do on purpose.
Sure, it's not, Tom.
Yeah.
The one I made a couple years ago, I went as Carmen Sandiego. You know, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah, I love that game.
She's playing Magic, apparently.
Yeah, that was me with a 5 o'clock shadow on.
So what are you going to do this year?
I don't know. I should send you it, Marcel. The last year, or this would have been... No, I was Carmen Sandiego 3 years ago. 2 years ago, I made a full adult-sized Jawa costume. Like, I even made, like, a mat. Like, I researched this. Like, I found out how they made the little Jawa, you know, the lighted eyes from the movies, and I made my own. I'll send you pictures. It actually looks pretty impressive.
Now, coming from someone named Chewy, I would like to propose to you right now.
Did you want... I will send you pictures as well. I'll put one in the show notes. Everybody can see what... a Tom-fueled homemade adult Jawa costume looks like.
Because luckily, wait a minute, we got off track again.
Yeah, I just wanted to share. I love Halloween and I love making Halloween costumes. To answer your question, Marcel, this year I'm planning to go likely as Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf.
I've always wanted to go as Teen Wolf.
Don't shave this time.
Like, yeah, exactly. I want to go like full. I want to get like the spear gum and the hair, and somehow get a Beavers costume, because that's the team he played for in the movie. I want to go all out.
Hey, let's see it.
And Marcel, I think you are pretty excited about this next time, so I'm going to let you share with us about the new dual decks.
Wait a minute, you missed one.
Oh, I missed one.
You missed one.
What
there's a
oh, for the
picture.
Mirrodin, I will say that I didn't play Mirrodin before, and I heard bad things about it, so my only hopes is it's not as bad as what I heard.
Well, I mean,
I'm on the fence.
They're going to be hyper, so yeah, we had to do that. So you stayed on the fence, so we're still tied here. But I
yes.
have to, they are going to be watching this very closely. I mean, obviously, mistakes happen, or cards they didn't expect to break out, they do. But also, they're going to have their antenna up to be like, we don't want that to happen again.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think they could do it right. I mean, they learned, they made multicolor, they did it again, like, real close, and it worked out. So, I hope they could do it this time.
I mean, I have no doubt in Wizards' abilities.
As long as they don't do Kamigawa again, as long as they don't, then we're all right.
Okay, I would say the more, maybe the divisive site is... the Urza's block. What did you guys think of Urza's block?
I was not playing during Urza's
block. Okay, so you weren't playing. Okay. If anybody was playing during the Tolarian Cammy days, I have to say that was probably the darkest time of Magic.
Sorry. That's an involuntary reflex. What was that card name again?
Tolarian Academy.
Okay. No, when I say you missed one, you missed the other M11 preview.
Oh, what's the other? Which one did I miss?
Chandra's Outrage.
There's thank you.
A picture of it on the MTG Salvation link that the Starkington Post link came from, or something like that.
Oh, well, share with me, because this is why I need a co-host. Keep me on track.
For 2 and 2 red, it's a common instant. Chandra's Outrage deals 4 damage to the target creature and 2 damage to that creature's controller.
So it does 4 and then a 2?
Yeah, 4 to the creature and 2 to the person.
That seems...
For 4 mana.
That's pretty. 6 damage for 4 mana, that's decent.
Yeah, I like
it. Not bad.
And four damage is kind of the magic number right now with Wall of Omens and stuff running around.
And the art has Chandra in the foreground, like, throwing this wall of lava up at a dragon, and that's pretty badass.
He's looking very, very angry. All right. Now, Marcel, you get to share with us about they're printing money again. How is Wizards of the Coast printing money this week?
They're doing the dual decks. They're trying to figure it out. So they did Ellipse. Is that how you pronounce it, versus Tezzeret?
I've always heard of Elspeth, but I'm not sure if I'm right.
Elspeth? I don't know. Yeah, Elspeth. Yeah, the big $30 card, Planeswalker, is now going to be for sale for $19.99, well, supposedly.
And who's Elspeth battling against in this?
Tezzeret.
Sweet.
That's going to be a good one. I just sold those cards, too, so I'm very excited about this.
Oh, you're even more happy. You rode the wave right.
I know. Somehow I had a premonition. Like, get rid of my cars, and I got them when the value was high.
Now,
yeah, this should be nice. It'd be interesting. I'm glad that they got this deck out right now. It's going to come out a month before it actually rotates out of standard, so that makes it a little bit exciting so people will be able to play with these cards. And there's also some rumors that actually Elspeth will be back in M11.
That is the big... Nothing to confirm that, but that is the rumor abounding right now.
Hmm.
So that should be interesting. I mean, that'd be nice to get rid of the old Planeswalkers and get a new wave of them. So, I mean, I would like that. That would be interesting and make the game fresh.
Now, for you guys, I never was ever able to get my hands on any of the From the Vault sets. Do you feel like this is going to basically is kind of like From the Vault 2.0, where these are going to be coming out? They're either going to be pre-ordered or shops are going to be selling them for above their MSRP right away.
At first, probably, but since the From the Vaults are a limited run, and these, good lord, I can still find one of the last 2 dual decks, Garrick versus Liliana, and what was the one before that? That is the one before that. I can still find the Phyrexia versus Coalition and Garrick versus Liliana at Target down the street.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I guess I just have the Jace versus Chandra, and then the original Goblins versus Elves.
Oh man, classic.
I think I got none of them.
So no, I just kind of watched. I got scared when I saw this. I know a lot of people were very frustrated with the, and you have a good point about the From the Vaults were a limited release thing. But I think a lot of people were really just plain angry about how those went, where they felt
if they felt cheated
because if they're at work or they had families or whatever it is, they couldn't get one. They did not have a chance to get one. And then some places are like, hey, it's $80 right away. This happened to Steve, where he had pre-ordered it, you know, got his name, and they got him in. They're like, ooh, no, they're actually like $80. He's just like, what? Oh, he was irate.
To say the least, huh? Well, yeah, I mean, I do see this probably being that they're going to sell it at least $30 just because of the price of the card. And, like, the Leveler's deck, I've seen certain places do the Leveler's deck a little bit higher. So, but, I mean, once it rotates out of standard, you will see it at the $19.99 price, unless it does go to M11. So, big speculation, but I know that online, I don't have to worry about that because they'll sell it at retail price.
And I guess for me, if I actually think about the decks, kind of, we have Elspeth, which is white, versus Tezzeret blue, I am much more excited for the Tezzeret deck. And again, this maybe kind of funnels into the upcoming Mirrodin, but who doesn't like having lots of artifacts and then attacking somebody with your typically non-creature artifacts and then smashing their face with them? I think we all love doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that.
What Tezzeret was the MSRP on the From the Vault?
It was 24, I think. $24.99.
$24.99, I think, are the MSRPs. Or mine, that says suggested retail price.
So, but that was it was 25 for From the Vault. I thought it was more than that for some reason.
If anybody out there, I know somebody out there is yelling at their iPod right now. But if you know what the initial MSRP was for one of those, let me know, because I am typing it in Google as we talk.
Well, my friend or my friend and co-host on the Mana Pool. Found at mtgcast.com. Mike, He said he thought it was $35.
Yeah, I hear $35. 70, you're right.
Okay, he paid $75 for what was the last one? The Exiled, and thought he got a good deal. See, that's not right.
that is really annoying. And only funny thing is, I actually just pulled it up on Amazon. You could apparently buy these on Amazon for a while. The MSRP was initially supposed to be $35, but apparently the product was actually being sold on Amazon for $180. That is good. Magic players love to gouge other Magic players. You notice that? We are a cutthroat bunch of bastards sometimes, like when it comes down to cards and prices and stuff.
That's what we get when we get mathematicians and doctors playing Magic.
Oh, you need that, huh? That's too bad. You don't need two kidneys, but you need to have four Jace Mind Sculptors. You can't play with suboptimal cards. Don't make me laugh at you. All right, guys. Any other Magic news before we go into what you've been playing and some listener emails?
Yes. Duels of the Planeswalkers for the PC comes out tomorrow.
Oh, is the official release tomorrow?
Well, according to the MTGcast listener, Whore Ben, who apparently I am bound and determined to mention on every episode of every show I'm ever on, he said it comes out tomorrow.
Did you say Whore Ben?
Yeah, he's the listener whore.
Oh, okay. Let me make sure I heard that right. Okay.
He's in on everybody. He talks to MTG Radio, Limited Resources, you guys, us, just everybody.
Is this Ben? Is his last name start with an A?
Yep.
That's who I actually met and played Magic with last weekend.
Yep, that's him. Isn't he a whore? He's a big whore.
I would not have considered him a man whore. He didn't have like a...
No, not man whore. Listener whore. Listener whore.
Well, did you guys ever see Rob Schneider's movies where he's the man whore?
Deuce Bigelow?
Deuce Bigelow, thank you.
That was hilarious.
How'd I get this yo-yo? Man whore. You that little guppy at the bottom of the pond. All right, so we won't talk any more about Deuce Bigelow, but that movie was great.
He told me just a few minutes ago that he was going to get Duels of the Planeswalkers when it came out tomorrow, so hopefully that means it actually does come out tomorrow, and he's not causing me to,
He's not all disappointed. All right, guys. Anything else before we go on to the decks?
Oh, the answer is no.
Yeah, there we go. All right. Somebody on here has three new decks, ranging from casual to expensive.
Yeah, I went crazy now that the cards are cheaper. So let's see. One of the decks I got is using the Spirit Dancer, the Core Spirit Dancer, which is it puts 2/+2 for each aura attached to it, and whenever an aura comes into play, you draw a card. Uses that along with the Aura Gnarlid. He's a beast. His power can't. Creatures with power less than Aura Gnarlid cannot block it, and it gets 1/1 for each aura in the battlefield. It's a 2/2. And then also, I used a Rox War Monk, and what was the other creature? I got Noble Hierarch. So basically, I used those creatures. I got those creatures along with a few auras. The auras with the totem armor. I got the Hyena Umbra, and then the Boar Umbra. Those are the only ones that I use pacifism and narcolepsy.
Nice.
Yeah, gotta love that. And also the Spreading Seas. Spreading Seas is actually really good with this. It does the disruptions, and it stays on the board without having to lose a creature, so it makes your Aura Gnarlid bigger.
And you draw two cards when you play it.
Exactly. I was just doing green white with this deck, and then I added the blue just because I wanted to do the Spreading Seas, and it worked just beautiful. So I loved it.
Oh yeah!
Wow, that actually sounds like a really fun deck, though, too.
Yeah, and it's not too expensive either. This is another cheap deck. This is the casual deck. The most expensive card is probably the Noble Hierarch, but you can replace that with say Birds of Paradise or even say the Land of War Elves if you really had to go budget. But I'll put this deck list up. It's a fun deck. Use Seagull of the Empty Throne as another finisher that you could throw in there. That's the highest of the curve is at 5. Everything is really low. So, I mean, it's a really fun deck, and it's been powerful.
Oh, yeah, that sounds awesome.
Huh, very cool. Now, what is, like, your expensive deck, Marcel?
The expensive deck went all out. Let me pull it up. I believe it's the... It's Eldrazi deck. I use the Lotus Cobra, Knight of Reliquary, with the Realms Uncharted, Law and Omens, so that way I could use the Realms Uncharted to get, like, say, the Eye of the Ugin and put that into the graveyard, and then the Eldrazi Temple, and I could recover that with Grim Discovery, And at the same time, I could boost my Knight of Reliquary. You could also bring cards and sacrifice stuff. So it's a lot of synergy. And then you get in, then you get into your big cards. You got the Vengers, Zendikar, and then I got the two Eldrazi, the Kozilek, and then also the Ulamog. And so it churns. It's a good deck. I like how it works. It's expensive, so I can't play it in the casual room. I feel bad if I do that. But I don't know if it's good. Don't know if it's good enough for tournament play per se, but if I probably tuned it, it probably would be. But it's a nice deck. It's very fun. I like it. I'll put that one up also.
Marcel, you bring up a really interesting point there. What is kind of your personal code, I guess, on what is casual room worthy and what should not be played in a casual room?
Oh, yeah. This is a big controversy.
Yeah, it's huge. Talk
about. So people probably that don't know, I had an email with someone, we were talking about this. On Magic Online, there's a casual room, and then there's a tournament practice room. Casual room is usually where people with less money or, you know, less quality cards, they play there. And then the tournament practice is where you get ready to get going with the serious competition. Casual room, you know what's wrong. If you're playing Jace, if you're playing these super planeswalkers, Maelstrom Pulse, anything that's really, you know, in the $10 range above $6, $8, you're kind of like, you're skidding on thin ice. It's not cool. I mean, you can do it, but it's like, you know, it's uncourteous. That I think if you got these good quality cards, play with the big boys, go into the tournament practice room and, you know, actually get some true competition. A lot of people, they would rather get these good cards and beat up on people that have, you know, not the best decks. And I feel like, you know, that's a wrong thing to do. That's not like competitive as a Magic player.
And Marcel, kind of like for you and like the people you play with, say you're encountering, like say you're in the casual with like a budget deck or your casual deck, how do you deal with people that are not following like somewhat like some code of conduct? Do you just immediately quit the game? Do you give them typed feedback saying, you know, hey, maybe this would be more appropriate for a different room? Like, how do you handle that part of it?
First off, I see the cards. I'll be like, are you really playing such and such deck in the casual room? And they'll come up with the response, oh, this is not this deck, or oh, I'm just testing right here. And then I'll come with some guilt trip. Well, why don't you play with the big boys instead of trying to pick on, being a coward, picking on the little guys? And usually
oh, yeah. I like where this is going, Marcel. This is awesome.
But I try to pick a bone with them and, you know, get into their head a little bit. Probably because I found out that if you really try to talking bad to people, they just disregard it. But if you try to pick at their conscience, they might actually listen to what you say. I've had a couple of people actually do that. But then I try to beat them with whatever deck I got, and then really rub it in if I do. Like, I beat you with this deck. Piece of crap.
Okay, Marcel, you were already on top of my book. You moved now into the table of contents. You are you're on the title cover. Right? I like your people throw down in the casual room. Really, really.
Oh yeah, I take offense to it. It's bad. I mean it's really like, just be courteous to people. That's really what it is. It's like if you the same thing like with the FNM, like you were saying with Jack, like his group was really casual, and then all of a sudden these people came in with these tournament decks and just ruined the fun of it. And basically that's what the casual room is. There's fun decks. This is where you get to play these creative decks that aren't always fine-tuned, but they do fun stuff that you can't play in a tournament practice room because they're not viable. So that's why you have this environment where it allows these more funner organic decks to breathe and not to be smothered by these powerful decks.
Sure. What about for you two? Do you play any MTGO, or are you mostly a paper Magic guy?
I am exclusively a paper Magic guy. I had an MTGO account 100 years ago, and then my computer went to crap, and I wasn't able to reinstall it. And I don't know how long until those things stop, or if they're always going to be there waiting for me. I don't know. I had two Jetés in my account. Let's hope it doesn't die.
They will. I can almost guarantee they'll still be there, because I had stopped playing. I started playing when it first came out. Because, Marcel, you probably know, what's the one set that's so valuable? Like, there's a few of the early sets are really expensive. Like, Pernicious Deeds are really ridiculously expensive, and a few other things.
Like, the one blue spell, the one that you could cast for free, I forgot, Force of Will, that's like 110. Chase is like 70. Which other ones? That one mono one that they do with the Scepter.
Okay.
Print it. I forgot what it is, but there's a few cards that are like in the $80-$90 range. But they're honestly not as expensive as paper cards. I realize.
It's just like there's just a couple like Apocalypse in general. I remember it being like now it seems to be very expensive for whatever reason it is.
Yeah, Vindicate certain cards like that.
So yeah, that's when I was playing. So my stuff was still there when I started kind of playing again, you know, about a year ago, and now just because of kind of Marcel talking about MTGO so much, I've really gotten back into it a lot, especially with the kind of solely playing in the casual room with, you know, the Killfiend deck is still so explosively fun to play a lot of times. I'm playing the Beastmaster's Ascension Eldrazi Spawn token deck. You know, just overall just fun decks. I've been having a real good time in the room. So I ran into a kind of interesting budget Esper deck the other day, which it's not often you play a deck, you're like, in your mind, like, you're like, that's kind of a cool deck. Like, you have to give the person props for it.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about MTGO. It's like, you know, you can play against people that you don't know, and they got these decks that you probably would have never thought of. And then, you know, it might spark your imagination to go try something brand new, and then it takes you into this whole other realm of magic.
And for you, Marceau, do you partake, like, any at all in the clans?
Actually, I don't, but we have a listener email that actually suggested we started one, so I put the application in for an MTG cast clan online.
Oh, nice. So did I. So we'll see which name we like better. Because I have MTG cast clan. Which one did you put in?
I'll just put MTG cast.
Oh, okay. Because Gavin had, we had one years ago, like at the beginning of MTG cast. And I think he still technically has a name. I should contact him for it.
Huh. I think we should just consolidate them into one to be better.
But, oh, yeah. I definitely agree. So I bet we could probably get a fair number of people there. It'd be kind of nice. We could actually use the TeamSpeak server that we have for that, maybe. Everybody could chat with each other then.
Yeah. Good idea.
Are you guys trying to be like Limited Resources?
I listen to Limited Resources most of the time, but what do they have going on?
Oh, they have a clan that has been growing. Well, it seems like it's been growing exponentially every episode. They're like, we've got 1,067 or something. It's ridiculous. The number just jumps every episode, about 50, 100 people in their clan.
One thing they have that I don't, though, is they know how to play Magic well.
I have that problem, too. I don't know.
All right, guys. Chewie, did you have any decks you wanted to mention before I go on to emails? I'm staring into your eyes on my Jonas Brothers poster right now, so I'm talking.
You know, that's creepy because I'm staring at my companion cube's middle heart there.
Sweet. I wonder if they make, like, companion cube, like, male underwear or something. Like, yeah, the companion cube, like, right on front.
Would it be on the front?
Both sides? It doesn't matter. On the inside? I don't care.
Oh, baby. Let's see. As far as what I've been playing, mostly I've been playing Duels of the Planeswalkers because I'm an achievement whore on Xbox 360, and I'm trying desperately to unlock everything and then get this play 8 lands in one turn achievement.
Play 8 lands in one turn?
Yeah, one of the new decks is a white-green landfall deck.
So is this all land searchers and stuff like that?
And the, step lynxes and the territorial Beloth and the freaking, what's the flyer dude, the griffin? Can't remember what he's called, the 2-2 for 2 that flies with landfall. And it's got Harrow and a Core Cartographer and Farhaven Elf and Evolving Wilds.
So, wow, that's the weird thing about those Xbox achievements. They do make you do stuff that you would never normally try to do nor want to do.
Yeah, but I think it's a 10-point achievement, man. Might be 15. Come on!
No, I mean, I've actually had a question about that. Have you purchased all the expansion packs for Duels of the Planeswalker?
Oh, yeah.
Have you found them to be worth the money? I mean, I've actually had people ask me this, and I only have the base set, or the base version right now.
Well, worth the money, it's only like $5. Yes, yeah, it's worth the money.
You don't understand how cheap I am. You don't understand.
No, I'm not.
I still have, I won't say what I was about to say.
No. There's another horror joke in there somewhere, but I'm not going
to
make it.
Keep that one to myself, because otherwise, because my wife's not here to listen, but she may get mad at me again. But
no, not for you in particular, but for anybody wondering if it's worth the money, it's only $5. And each expansion, not only do you get the, I'm such a corporate whore, not only do you get the
Give me the bullet points, Chewie. I want the bullet points.
You get the new decks. You get the new challenges, which some of these challenges are.
Okay, yeah, you got me. Okay, good.
There's new campaign, and you get 3 new cards for every deck that you already have, which is a plus.
All for $5?
All for $5. It's hours, literally hours of
Did it used to be $10, now it's only $5?
No, the expansions were always $5.
Oh. You're supposed to lie to me at that point and say, yeah,
I mean,
it's 50%
now
off.
How much would you pay?
50%
or $50.
Other than that, I've been working on just tweaking my old decks. Since I'm a casual player and have absolutely, you know, casual multiplayer almost exclusively, and have absolutely no, let's say, deck building discipline, almost all of my decks are 62, 3, 4 cards, and I've been slowly, over the last week or so, working on getting them all down to 60-card decks, which is it's a challenge when I've had, you know, my graveyard deck full of Nether Shadows and Ashen Ghouls for ever and ever and ever, literally ever. And it's been 64 cards as long as I've had it, and I'm trying to knock it down to 60. And I actually managed to do it last night, and it hurt. It hurt a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of like picking which kid you like best, huh?
I know, right? Luckily, I don't have any, so I don't like any of them.
I like you, but your brother, I'd like him better. I can't help it. I know that's going to happen to me when I have kids. I'd be like, yeah, you know, you're cool, but I mean, your brother's obviously a lot cooler than you are. I mean, you have to be able to tell this. All right, guys.
Oh, and one more thing. The I finally built one EDH deck, which the episode that was uploaded about 20 minutes before we started recording this, which is the Mana Pool episode 130, EDH Live. Mike is dumb. We actually played our first, all of us playing EDH, and we recorded it. And it was ridiculous, and it was a whole lot of fun. And then ever since then, I've been on this EDH deck building kick. I'm working on a Shroom and a, who's the Karthus? There was one more I had in my head that I already forgot. Crap.
I will warn you, if you bring Shroom decks, some people may get upset with you.
Well, since the only people we play with are each other and we don't know any better, I've heard the same about Xur the Enchanter decks, and I was like, why? He's awesome.
Just let you know, just be, you know, as long as you don't abuse him too much.
I just really want him because I can go get an Oblivion Ring when I attack with him. How awesome is that?
It is very good. That is.
I don't think abusive. I think awesome.
I get a little shudder in me when I hear about Shroom decks. I'm like, oh. All right, guys, we have a bunch of emails to get through. We'd love to get emails. I am pitimp, PITIMP at mtgcast.com. Marcel, where should they email you at for some potentially MTGO tips?
Marcel at mtgcast.com.
That is a phenomenal email address.
Oh, thank you. I love it myself.
How about for you, Chewy?
I can be reached at themanapool@cardshark.com.
Are you guys, like, officially, like... I know your thing's kind of through Cardshark. Are you guys, like, officially linked with them, or, like, what's the relationship there? I've always just been curious.
I have been working as the content editor for cardshark.com for... I have no concept of the passage of time, but several years.
Really?
5 or 6, maybe, by now.
Oh, okay, wow.
And I got the idea to do a podcast. I guess it's been about 2.5 years now. And I contacted them. I'm like, hey, boss, would you mind sponsoring us if I start up a podcast? She's like, what does that entail? I'm like, I don't know. Turns out it's paying
women,
for...
Women and booze.
Yes, turns out it's paying for the hosting fee and sending us prizes every once in a while to give to listeners. Which, then she was like, that sounds awesome. Sure, get right on that. I was like, woohoo! And so, yeah.
Okay, cool. I didn't know that you'd work for them. That's good for me to know.
I've actually been shopping from them for far longer than that. Oh, plug in my sponsor on a bigger show, cardshark.com.
Yes, and also, and Marcel, I think why don't we go through it now? We had talked a little bit a couple episodes when you were on last time, but you maybe had some tips about people if they're looking to expand their MTGO card collections, maybe some places for them to check out.
Oh, yeah, the actual card bots.
Yeah, or we were talking after the show. He said, "Oh, you know, we had talked a little bit about it." And you said you maybe had some extra tips for people to share with people about, you know, how to maybe get their cards or where to get them.
The best thing to do is go to the bots and probably find sometimes they got 100-to-1 ticket bots or something like that where you could get a bunch of the common cards for cheap and try to figure out the staple cards that you need to get. You might be able to put up like a list. They had them all on the mother site. Of like the staple cards. As long as you got those cards and pretty much a couple of the other ones, you can pretty much play most decks you come up with cheaply. Just go to the bots really and just find them. And most commons are usually a couple pennies. Uncommons could roughly about, you know, 5 cents, 5 to 10 cents, and just build your collection from there. I mean, it's going to take you a couple of dollars. I believe it costs $10 to get into Magic, and you could trade it all for tickets and take the tickets and buy cards. Might cost you like, you know, another $20-$30 to really get a good pool, but you'll have enough cards to be able to play.
All right, cool. So we'll go on. So Stephen W., he's our first emailer. He actually sends me a correction from my – this will be the emails correcting Tom from his solo show. That will be the theme of our emails this week. So Stephen W., actually, I mentioned this Frontier Alternate Magic format that was listed on the Wizard of the Coast main site last week. I had never heard of it, so I thought this was a brand new thing. Stephen reminds me this actually was – a straight copy of an article from Duelist number 31 way back in 1998. And apparently they didn't even update the rules. So he just wanted to make sure people knew this. And if you ever try to play this Frontier Magic, it's pretty busted if you play any sort of token generation deck, because the more creatures you have, the more mana you can access, and kind of keeps going from there. Let's see, Chuck Q, he said he liked the line from the last episode that Deathless Angel shops in Lane Bryant. I did not get a single negative feedback about that, so there we go. Apparently people don't know what Lane Bryant is.
Did you guys believe that a few weeks ago they had the Deathless Angel as one of the wallpapers? I was like, why?
So, okay, Chewie, this is your chance. We've talked about this. I don't even care. But I got lots of negative feedback. When you take a look at Deathless Angel's art, do you feel that she is weight appropriate for her height? did you notice, guys, I didn't use the word obese anywhere in the sentence, obese? Obese.
Will you stop that? Okay, I'm all right. I'm okay. And, you know, when they first showed the card on the visual spoiler, I sort of glanced at it and said, something about that doesn't look right, and that's just me. And then I pulled one, and I looked at it, and I was like, huh. And then I listened to you guys. I was like, oh, that's what it is. And then they blew it up and made it a wallpaper of the week, and that just, that was a bad choice. Just going to go out there and say that.
So it sounds like you're probably more likely to agree with me than disagree with me. So do you think she does shop at Lane Bryant then? Would she get her pantsuits at Lane Bryant?
On in.
Kato Plus, man. Kato
Air
Plus.
Mail deliver to pick them up.
Oh. Although there was that line about the number of wings she needed to stay afloat, and actually all of the big angels have six wings.
Yeah,
so.
That was totally wrong. Like, I did not realize that many angels had six wings. So that, I will agree, that reasoning fell through. I mean, that's why you call these theories. You make a theory, it's a hypothesis. This is the scientific method. You get a hypothesis, you test it, and you modify your hypothesis. So even though she may be large and in charge, that doesn't necessarily mean that the number of wings equals how big you are. I stand corrected on that point. Let's see. Chucky, he also recommended a B-movie called Samurai Princess, and it sounds just bizarre. I can't even read the description because that would be a little too unfamily-friendly, I believe.
Okay, hang on. Can I ask something here?
Yes.
I don't listen. I'm going to be honest here. I don't listen to Monday Night Magic on a regular basis.
I don't even listen to Monday Night Magic on a regular basis. You're okay.
Well, I don't feel so bad then. But apparently I missed the beginning of this B-movie thing. Where did this come from? Because every episode you're like, here's some B-movies. And I'm like, what?
I'm trying to remember. It's a good question, but I'm not sure exactly how it got started. Somehow I think I mentioned it, or maybe Jack mentioned something, and then so many emails we got back have B-movie recommendations. And I also do a movie podcast, and we talk a fair bit about B-movies on that. I can't remember if I may have mentioned it linked to that. But that's why we get so many B-movie recommendations. My Netflix queue is like 150 long now, so I'll add them all in. As long as they exist on Netflix, they get added on the list. And then Chad from Hawaii actually sends really good emails. As I had mentioned, Human Centipede, talking about B-movies, the Human Centipede, the first segment. He sent in, somebody actually made a Flash game called Human Centipede. So they took you guys played the arcade game Centipede with the rollerball, and you shoot the little things as they come down, and they break apart. But they replaced the graphic of the centipede with, like, the human centipede, so it's like people mouth the butt, and then you, like, shoot them apart. It's pretty good. I'll have a link in the show notes. It tickled me. I'm like, what would a human centipede game is going to be like? I'm like, oh, I get it. he also sent in a B-movie recommendation, so here you go, Chewie, for Blood-Sucking Freaks. It contains evil dwarves, butt darts, and a very special hot dog. I have not seen this movie.
Butt darts.
I want to now, though.
Special hot dog, uh-oh.
Yeah,
I'm not sure
if those two are linked, but yeah, you got to watch out. Yeah, we won't even go into the... I'm not sure, Marcel, were you listening when I told some of the stories from when I used to teach a contraception class in college?
No, I didn't catch that one.
Okay, this very, very briefly, like, for people that are, like, applying to medical school or wherever it is, you have to have all these, like, extracurricular activities, like you have to volunteer in hospitals or things like this. That I wasn't that organized to be able to do that, but I fell into this class where you learned how to teach a contraception class. So every young woman that came to the clinic at the university to get birth control for the first time had to sit through this just horrific class where they had to learn about all the different options. And this class contained about 15 women and me. So I was the only guy that was involved in this. It was actually Holly, who I'm now married to. She's the one that actually got me involved in this class. So when I had to go through this class, every single thing I had to list at con as needing male participation, which always I found kind of funny. One con for condoms is that they require male participation. But as part of this, though, we went on some field trips. Thank you. I'm barely having a little stroke. So going on a field trip. So we went on a field trip to the various a couple of different sex stores that are in Minneapolis. There's Sex World, and then the more interestingly named Lickety Split. So I went there, and I just dressed with like jeans, and actually at that time I wore this like lumberjack. It was like a thick red plaid jacket. So it was me, this older woman who taught the class, and then 15 young college-age women. So we're at Sex World, just kind of looking around. I learned why they have popcorn in the movie viewing room. I learned all these things that day. And I had this guy come up to me and he asked me how long I'd been a pimp. I'm like, what? He's like, you're a pimp, right? I mean, he's like, you got the madam and you have 15 young college-age women. Like, no, I'm not a pimp. Never anybody must make me for a pimp before in my entire life.
Tom the pimp.
I am. Yes, if you see pictures of me, I'm very non-pimp-like. That's why it makes it funny.
It's not pimp in MTG Cast. It's pimp.
Yeah, it's just pimp.
Pimp.
It is. But that's I made that card once, the pimp. Put a little pimp hat on him. All right. Before we lose more listeners, David W. writes in, he saw on the mothership that the intro packs for M11 are going to be multicolored. And he thought this is the first time ever that the intro decks for the core sets will be multicolored. And I said, since they rebranded these as being intro decks, the answer would be yes. They were all single-colored before. And does this mean we'll actually get multicolored cards in M11?
Maybe. I think they were really particular against doing that, but... I don't know. I hope so.
I'm going to guess no. Just a guess, though.
Yeah,
it's a gut feeling.
It's tough, because I know they're really ramping up what the core set means. It seems, I guess I would go with Marcel. I would say it's a pretty strong maybe, or I would even go more to the yes side.
Because color cards make it exciting. I remember when I first started playing Magic and I saw the color cards, they just drove me crazy. So I can imagine them doing the same for new players, so I don't see it being a bad for the game.
Yeah, and I could see it being really good where they can use it again as a way to introduce like the concepts of the game of maybe limited only being allied colors. Where if you see this multicolor card, be like, hey, that does make sense. Maybe I should be playing, red and black together, or some of the allied colors. It might be a way to suggest to players to kind of explore the design space without having to hand it to them saying, hey, you should play black and red together. Usually they do pretty well, like peanut butter and jelly. No, they discover that on their own because they see these gold cards. Like, hey, these are always these two colors together.
But also what's interesting is that they also, the colors, most of them are enemy allies. You got the blue, white, and the red, green are the only ally colored combinations, and everything else is blue, red. You got green, black, and you got white, black. So that's actually kind of interesting and exciting, I think.
Yeah, and it kind of goes against my hypothesis, so it may need to be modified again.
Now you fail.
Yes, and David also he was really hoping they reprint Stang in the set. And I have a Stang. Stang is amazing. Marcel, have you ever seen Stang before?
I believe it's Legends. Red, white, blue. It's
red, green.
Red, green. Oh, yeah. He's like a 5/6 for, or like a 4/5 for something ridiculous. 6 mana.
He's the original Broodmate Dragon. He's a 6 mana for a 3/4, and then when he comes out, he poops out a Stang twin token. But if you lose either one of the pair, they both die.
I had a friend card. Who used, Mirror Gallery in a deck with Soul Foundries and Stang and Brothers Kamazaki Kawaki, those guys.
Oh, yes.
And he just loved to poop out as many copies of the Brothers those guys, or Stang as he could.
I like Soul Foundry with a Stang. That's classy. That actually has class.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty awesome. And then someone would bounce one Stang, and he'd lose them all.
It's just a cascade of death.
Oh, really? That's just fun. Casual fun. There you go.
Let's see. Finn writes in. He's going to be disappointed because he says Conley should be on every show. He says he's amazing. He also says I'm amazing, so that's why I'm reading your email. He says he wonders if I ever mentioned the movie called The Room by Tommy Wiseau. And yes, I have. That movie's terrible. He says, I love the show. You all are hilarious. Would you guys ever do a show where you discuss your favorite decks? And we do that a little bit, but I guess we've never had a just a dedicated show where we go through our favorite decks of all time. So it's kind of an interesting idea.
I would love to do it. Talk about decks all day.
So Marcel's on board, so maybe at some point in the future, maybe during summertime would be a good time, so I'm going to be a deadbeat with a sugar mom by the summer, so I will have some free time to do an extra podcast.
Man, I might have to rip that off for my show. I mean,
Well, yeah, I am a harsh mistress, you know, for MTGcast. Did you know this was on your site? I'm like, really? Wow, okay. That's really filthy. let's see. Peter A., he agrees that he thinks a co-host contest would be fun, and he also thinks the best option regarding intentional draws would be to only allow them in larger tournaments. He sees that there is a need for them, and I do agree with that, but he also agrees that I inherently like to see people play to win. Like, you can split the prize, but I want to see you two battle to see which one of you had the better deck, or at least the better draws. I want to see that. Let's see. Jim writes in. He has a very interesting point about the change in the reprint policy. So I was actually going to read this one in its entirety. It's only about one paragraph. He says, what he thought the final blow was Hasbro's legal team looking at the amount of card owners out there and the combined value of their cards, which they could put at risk by reprinting them. The existence of a reprint policy could constitute a contract and therefore have put Hasbro at risk for a class action lawsuit from card owners. A potential lawsuit could have cost the company far more than it would have made in the reprints. So I thought this. I am not a lawyer. I've never heard of this for things like sports cards or comic books, but I thought it was an interesting idea where could collectors class action lawsuit a company by reprinting things that were initially told to be a limited supply?
I don't think so. I think this is a stretch.
Okay.
It sounds good, but I don't think it really would have anything because it's a policy. It's not actually a contract per se. So I think there's no legal. They have no legal. I mean, they could do whatever they want. This is their business. They have the rights. They have the control, and I believe that they should.
Okay, it was interesting. I had not thought of it that way.
I could always check with my lawyer co-host Brian and see if he knows anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody, I'm just curious. You know, it doesn't have to be about magic, but something where, like, hey, I bought this because it was a limited release. Now they're making more. Could I theoretically do anything about that? But it's not like, I guess they never have, we obviously have never signed a contract with the Wizards of the Coast when I buy a pack of cards. And a lot of these cards are probably purchased on the secondary market, which is also interesting. You know, Wizards, they have not got money from these things for a long time when they've traded hands.
Plus, I'm guessing that an intelligent lawyer would say, look, all of those, Legends copies of, quick, give me a good Legends card.
Mana Drain.
There you go. All those Legends copies of Mana Drain are still there. They're still in limited supply. They didn't print any more Legends copies of Mana Drain. They printed, you know, M15 Mana Drains.
They're not the exact same thing. They're not the actual 1995 card. Okay, that's a good way to think about it. Okay, I like that. Let's see. Eric Y, he writes in with two B-movie things. He recommends a movie called Frogs. It actually has Sam Elliott from 1972. So I thought that was...
Jam!
Yeah, and also there's one called Southland Tales that stars Justin Timberlake. And his question is, do you think that Magic is going towards a more mythic-centric style of competitive play, and how do we feel about that? And he says, is this merely just a side effect of Rise of the Eldrazi and its mythic feel? And also, we talked a little bit about From the Vault sets already, but again, I've heard people say the mythification of Magic. Pros, cons, do you guys even feel this is even an issue?
Yes.
I'm still tripping over the fact that you just said mythification.
Mythification, that's the name of this podcast, is mythification.
Yeah, I mean, it's causing prices to jump. I mean, I know this last set was a lot more expensive than previous ones, and but the benefit is that the rares tend to be a little bit cheaper now. So, as long as they make less cards in the mythic, maybe two or three out of the whole set that are actually tournament playable, and then make most of the more playable cards in rare and below, I don't think it'll be a problem. But if they continue to make more and more staples into the mythics, then we're gonna see cost creep in Magic.
I do seem like they're printing more. Well, I don't know. There's still Hellcarver Demon.
Yeah, I think people just jump when you see them and say, you're like, you're seeing a Gideon already, and you know it's going to be this much. And I think Jace the Mind Sculptor really put that, and Baneslayer really put this on the map, where these are really two major staples that if you're playing, you really wanted 3 to 4 of each one. And that's $200 to $400 for a playset of each one.
Yeah, coming out the door, $40. I can't remember too many cards in recent memory that came out, you know, just as soon as they're released, they're $40, $50 cards, besides the Baneslayer and then Jace, so, and Gideon. So now I hope we don't have to see this trend continuing on, because it's not going to be fun.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, from their side, they're probably, it'd be interesting to kind of hear with it. And actually, Erica, that's on the show every once in a while, he's looking to do an interview with them about this, just to say, you know, this is a question that a lot of people have, you know, trying to do this in a very neutral position, not saying negatively or positively. But from what we've heard about their sales figures, it sounds like Magic sales are at an all-time high. So it's hard for them to change something that seems to be working, at least in the short run.
I don't think the Mythics are correlating to them having all-time sales. I mean, it did happen at the same time, but I think it was a combination of their other efforts and, you know, the actual, you know, marketing of the product and the M10 and the actual fund of Zendikar. I think that there's other factors in actually the Mythic as being the reason why they made so much more sales.
Okay. And I guess also just the player base just continues to grow. I assume there's more players playing now than 5 years ago.
Yeah, but I believe it was stagnating at a certain point, like right around 10. I think 10 was their big realization that Magic needed to be trimmed down. Because they had Lorwyn, and they had so many cards, and they decided that we're not going to release this many cards out. The sets are going to be smaller. We're not going to do 4-card blocks, I believe. And so they realized that there was just too many cards, too much stuff for people to buy, for them to actually be invested in Magic, so they made it a little bit cheaper. But then they brought into the Mythics, which caused certain cards to just shoot up in value. So it's like a, you know, bittersweet.
Yeah, I think it is tough. Like you said, when out the door, they're $40. And so I think a lot of people like the ability for them to, you know, spot the upcoming good cards and then get them at a low price. And then when they start to show up in tournament decks, then they shoot up in price. I think people liked that aspect of collecting Magic.
Yeah, that wasn't so bad because it gave you the opportunity to, you know, sneak under and grab those Tarmogoyfs when they were, you know, $4.50. When by $4.50, I mean, you know, 50 cents, actually.
Yeah, you know, $45 or $75, whatever they are these days. Let's see, Dan A., he has 2 B-movie recommendations. He has Lesbian Vampire Killers and also The Rise of Leslie Vernon. I have never seen either one of these.
So is that lesbians that kill vampires?
Yes.
Or
these are
killers
British
of lesbian I'm so confused.
These are two British guys who they solely kill lesbian vampires.
What a horrible waste of lesbian vampires.
I was going to say, I mean, can't be a huge pool to begin with. That's the thing. I mean, let's see. And this was actually from a listener in Holland. We are entering, if I had like the horn sound I'd play right now, we are officially entering completely unconfirmed rumor land right now. So this was just a random email from a listener in Holland. He said there's going to be a new card in M11 that would be the new Shyvan Dragon. And this is supposedly what the casting cost and the ability is. This is kind of the match to the Baneslayer. It's a 3 colorless and 2 red. It would have haste, first strike, and trample, and then protection from angels and sphinx. Angels and sphinxes. Sphinx eye.
I highly suspect this is not a real card, but if it is, be really sweet.
Just wanted to share with everybody. Like I said, that's unconfirmed rumor land, but there you go. Obviously, it probably wouldn't be called Shyvan Dragon. It'd be something else, but...
It would be a $40 card.
It would be, because that would be 5 mana for a hasting flying guy. That would be there.
Yeah, pretty much in there.
Let's see. Next we have a different Rob A. He actually sent in this is not Magic related, I'll warn you. He sent in a link to a product on Amazon titled the Laptop Steering Wheel Desk. And seriously, this is like a piece of plexiglass where it kind of hooks on your steering wheel and it comes straight out at you where you can put your laptop on it. Why this is interesting is normally on Amazon people can put in reviews and then post up pictures of themselves using the product. If you click on the customer images for the laptop steering wheel desk, none of these are people of actually using the product. It's just like pictures of horrific car accidents. I mean, there's like 90 of these pictures. It's unreal. And it'd be like, you know, I really loved using this with my coworkers, and there'll be like this pile of like, you know, 800 cars, and clearly people are dead in this. And
there's one on the main page. You don't have to click on the see customer images. It says notes underneath it. And there's a little square that's the note that's on one of the cars way up just inside the door. You mouse over it and it says, you can kind of see it in use here. And it's a line of cars that have all rear-ended each other.
It's pretty entertaining. And some of the reviews are also pretty good. And a couple of the pictures also, like, people, like, photoshopped in, like, having, like, cans of beer on their little desk. Like, somebody's like, I finally have a place to put my PBR can when I'm driving. And there's, like, a little PBR on it. So it made me realize how much of the stuff actually goes on Amazon world. A lot of these reviews aren't actually serious. Because, like, here, I love my laptop steering wheel desk so much I got one from my 90-year-old mother. She's an avid crossword puzzle fan, and now she can work on them while she is driving back and forth from bingo at the senior center. One cautionary note, be careful of those jerks that stop at yellow lights. My poor mother rear-ended one, and the airbag drove the desk back into her stomach, which ruptured her spleen. But luckily now she's recovered, and she's back on the road, cranking out those New York Times crossword puzzles once again. So I don't know, it really tickled me.
Oh my god, somebody put, it looks like a video game steering wheel.
Yes.
On it.
Yeah, it's
now you can drive as you drive. Yo, dog.
Yo, dog, you can drive as you drive.
I heard you like driving.
See, yeah, next, Stephen M., he wrote in that he wants a client for MTG MTGcast, and hey, guess what? We listened. There's probably going to be about 800 of them, but we'll try to consolidate them. So please don't start an MTGcast clan. Marcel and I are on top of it. And then Mo B. Writes in, he was responding to our art question. He's always liked the art, angel art done by Matthew D. Wilson, and if he could pick one to have the original on his wall, he would have the original Invasion Rhea Dawnbringer by Matthew D. Wilson. And it is a very nice piece of art.
Oh, yeah.
And Marcel, I know you have a couple of emails to share with us.
Yeah, let's see. First one's from Matt, I believe. He sent me an email about the Kiln Fiend deck. He had his own one that he did with a red and white, which ran with the Emergent Scathe, which is a rebound, and it gives him protection from color, which can work as a unblockable. And he took it out to his FNM, and he actually did pretty good. He went 3-0, and he did pretty good. That's why I'm surprised that that deck actually, he did into the Boris one, and it came out on top. So there's actual room for Kiln Fiend to be competitive in play. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I had heard a few people kind of playing a red-white-black version where they would put the Consuming Vapors or a couple other things in there as well.
Like Blightning. Oh.
Yeah, and Blightning was another one.
Oh.
And Surreal Memoirs, which lets you get back instant spells. It's a red rebound spell that lets you grab back an instant from your graveyard, was another one I thought was interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, that one guy, he sent it to me. The only problem with that was the spells are a little too expensive. And I think with the Kiln Fiend, he likes some cheap ones, so you get like two off in a row. But any rebound spells go good with him, so be interesting to see how it plays out. Okay, and let's see, this other one's from Simon. He's from Taiwan, sent me from way international. He's talking, he's an MTGO player, and he was telling me about how he got hooked on MTGO and how he likes it and how it actually made him a better player and whatnot. And he wanted me to bring up, you know, like how Magic is moving it more towards the online, and that people are feeling like a discontent because they're attached to their paper cards, but then they don't want to move to online, and there's like two different communities going on. And he brought up a number of good points. I would like to bring up like how MTGO, his pros for MTGO is that it teaches you how to play better because they have a strict rule system. You can't actually play wrong. And I found this to be the same thing. It's like when I first played, like there before I played on MTGO, I actually played Magic wrong. There's like certain things involved in the stack and other little triggers I didn't do correctly that I didn't realize until I actually played on the MTGO how to do it correctly. And that was one thing that he found out to be better. Did you find this with yourself, Tom?
Yeah, especially, I guess, with the big M10 rule changes, it helped me. I know that the battle changes don't come up a lot, but that helped. But a lot of people are starting to learn about things like the stack and layers and things like that. It does actually help. And responding to triggered events, that is a huge thing. Like when you're actually like playing Kiln Fiend and you're playing spells and things are getting triggered, you know, how do you correctly use things like rebound? It does help because you're seeing an example of how it should be done.
Exactly. And so you know it and you see it. And when you see it visualized, it's a lot easier for you to get it. So, yeah, because Magic is very abstract. Even when I look at the spoiler, like I think these cards are cool, but until I actually play with them, like you don't get it. Same thing with like the rules. And he also wanted to mention that it was cheaper to play. And this is another thing I want to point out. I don't want to knock Paper Magic, but MTGO is a bit cheaper. I actually did a price comparison of this last set, the Rise of Eldrazi, and to get the whole set right now as we speak, it'd be like about $130 to get one of every card. Whereas if we would go, I went to a couple card stores online, and it's actually close to $400 in comparison.
Okay.
So I found that to be very interesting how the economics of it is, and it's a lot cheaper. You can actually get a play set of all the cards, but at the same price it'll cost you to get one set of the cards, in essence. So there's another point that he wanted to make about, you know, why MTGO is better. So
okay. Let's see. And Chewy, it looks like you have no emails, is what it says on here.
I was muted. I remember the guys on Limited Resources saying, I think it was Marsh, saying that he looked at the prices and it was actually cheaper to get the playset on, or to get a set on Magic Online and then trade it in for a physical card set than it would be to go out and buy the physical card set.
Yes, it would be, actually.
Which struck me as brilliant. He's like, I just recently got his, my, what did he say, his M10 foil set? I was like, ah!
Jeez.
Yeah, I never thought about that, actually. Wow, that's actually pretty cool.
Maybe, yeah, so it'd take a lot of work, but it'd be some sort of weird, like, infinite money cycle where buy it and you buy the cards again and send it. You'd be, like, making, like, $20 each time. It'd be like those bottle running scams where you, like, get cans and you take them to a different state. Because they have a higher return rate, you know. It was on Seinfeld once, I think.
I live in California. We pay the most here. It's like
that's
5 cents a can.
You have a beautiful state, Marcel.
I guess so. Got Schwarzenegger's governor.
You do. Minnesota. We can't throw dirt because we had the body as our governor.
I live in North Carolina. I'm just waiting for Ric Flair to run for governor.
Oh, Nature Boy! I'd love to have Nature Boy as a. He would suplex, you know, taxes. He'd be all over that place.
Give unemployment the figure four.
Love the figure.
Every press conference, woo!
I think, like, yeah, who didn't love, like, the, I call it the old days of boxing, but kind of like the late 80s, mid 90s boxing, or wrestling, not like what it is now.
But, yeah, that's like, when I watched it.
Yeah, Ric Flair, you know, Roddy Piper, just all these guys were just awesome.
Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yes.
Earthquake.
We did a top 10 list of, like, who are your favorite wrestlers, and there are some really good ones. Yeah, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Oh, God, he beat people with a 2x4? How do you like that? That's amazing. The Ultimate Warrior? How can't forget the Ultimate Warrior? That guy was crazy. If you go on YouTube and search for the Ultimate Warrior, they have some of his interviews. Like, he is clearly crazy. Like, he's just talking about bringing people over the lawnmower, and then he's all over the map. He's amazing.
It turns out, I think he actually was crazy, though. You know, he legally changed his name to Warrior?
I would not put it past him.
And apparently he thought then that gave him the legal rights to the name The Ultimate Warrior, even though, you know, the WWF at the time owned that.
Like, no, but no, Mr. Warrior.
I was like, I'm going to change my name to Magic the Gathering so that I can legally have all the rights.
You have to share the money with me now, right? No, you're dumb. You're dumb.
Isn't he the guy the Iron Sheik had the beef with? Did you hear about that one?
I remember the Iron Sheik. I don't know if he had a beef with him though.
Yeah, it was someone. He's like, I'm gonna beat you. I'm gonna break you, and then I'm gonna do you something in your booty and submit you. You're gonna make you mine.
So like, Iron Sheik, you're sharing a little with us right now.
Oh my goodness. I can't say exactly what he says, but I do recommend you look it up on YouTube. Look, the Iron Sheik goes nuts, and he is hilarious.
I will do that. Thank you, Marcel. You've just broadened my horizons today. We've got Iron Sheik, you know, doing, you know, sodomizing people, apparently. We have Indonesian 2-year-old smoking. It's been a good episode. So MTG Cast News this week will be very brief. Taking a look, and we might be, next couple weeks, we might have a little bit of a new look coming up for MTG Cast. I'll be sharing it with the co-host. They'll take a peek at it first. Just make it a little easier to maneuver and find what you want. And then also, this is the last open week, so you have still 1 week to open. We'll announce the winners on episode 210 for the two-time Gideon Jura giveaway, and most likely I'll be throwing in some extra prizes. Because we've had a lot of really, really good entries. I would feel bad not rewarding some people with a prize. So for
Am
sure,
I allowed to enter this?
If it's like I told the other co-hosts, as long as you make up a believable fake name, there'd be no way for me to know.
Interesting.
But we thought there've been some really good entries so far. I've been really impressed. We have well over 40 some entries, and some people put in a lot of work to do this, so I appreciate that. So
I'm almost feel bad. I want to give them a consolation prize or something.
Exactly, because I have the two Gideons are in my hand. I'm waving them right now in the air, like you can see this. But I'm also going to try to find some other cards to give away. So hopefully everybody can kind of be happy with this.
Yeah, thank you everybody.
Yes, because they're fun to see these photos. You've had people from different countries on the beach. One guy with his cats in there. I mean, all these really good ones. And North Dakota for Life. You know who you are, North Dakota for Life. That's a good one. So, guys, that is the end of the show. Do you have anything else before we let people enjoy the rest of their Memorial Day?
No, don't get too drunk out there.
And by them, I mean me.
Well, in that case, I have 20 more minutes of nonsense to talk about. No, thank you very much for letting me hop on here and give you an extra head to talk to, Tom.
Yes, I mean, I need to get to the full Jonas Brothers post, otherwise, because I'm not sure which one I'm talking to. When I have three co-hosts, it's perfect, because I'm actually on the poster, so that's me, and then I got three Jonas Brothers.
So can you ever post that online and show the...
I'm not going to put it on Facebook, because I don't want that picture to haunt me for the rest of my life, but I would like to share it. I will send it to you, Chewy, so you can check it out.
All right, I'm the deformed one in the middle.
You'll see. You'll know which one I am because I don't have a shirt on. You'll know which one I am.
Oh, it's hilarious.
So, thank you, Chewy, Marcel. Thank you for joining me. It was a fantastic episode. Everybody listening, have a good Monday, Memorial Day. Join us next week. Send in your pictures of your card collection or where you play Magic to win. Look in the show notes. I only accept entries in the MTGcast thread. I apologize. Have a fun weekend. Have a fun week. We'll talk to you guys later.
And listen to the Manipool.
And the Manipool. Good stuff.
Adios.
And Hood Chefs. Is there a new Hood Chefs coming out?
Yes, I'm editing the video. I'm in my finals right now, so I'm more worried about my finals than anything else. So in 2 weeks, we'll have a new episode up and running. And then hopefully we'll have another one shot in another month.
Okay, so perfect. Well, Marcel, keep us up to date, and we'll make sure that we share it with everybody, too, when it gets put up for final on YouTube.
I will do. People that have gone to the website, I know it's a little under construction. There's still some things to done. I'm sorry. I got school. So as soon as I get done with that, then, you know, my life resumes.
I understand, Marcel. I can understand. Or I could say I can empathize with this.
I know. 12 years.
All right, guys. We'll see you later. Have a good week.
All right. Bye-bye.